the 18th of March. Up betimes into the office to write fair my paper for Dennis Gordon against anon, and then to other business where all the morning. Dennis Gordon by and by comes, and I did read over and give him the paper, which I think I have much obliged him in. A little before noon comes my old good friend Mr. Richard Cumberland to see me, being newly come to town, whom I have not seen almost, if not quite, these 7 years, in his plain country parson dress. I could not spend much time with him, but prayed him come with his brother, who was with him, to dine with me today, which he did do, and I had a great deal of his good company, and a most excellent person he is as any I know, and one that I am sorry should be lost and buried in a little country town, and would be glad to remove him thence. And the truth is, if he would accept of my sister's fortune, I should give £100 more with him than to a man able to settle her, 4 times as much as I fear he is able to do. And I will think of it, and a way how to move it, he having in discourse said he was not against marrying, nor yet engaged. I showed him my closet, and did give him some very good music, Mr. Caesar being here upon his lute. They gone, I to the office, where all the afternoon very busy. And among other things comes Captain Jennifer to me, a great servant of my Lord Sandwich's, who tells me that he doth hear for certain, though I do not yet believe it, that Sir William Coventry is to be Secretary of State, and my Lord Arlington, Lord Treasurer. I only wish that the latter were as fit for the latter office as the former is for the former, and more fit than my Lord Arlington. Anon Sir William Penn came and talked with me in the garden, and tells me that for certain the Duke of Richmond is to marry Mistress Stuart, he having this day brought in an account of his estate and debts to the king on that account. At night, home to supper, and so to bed. My father's letter this day doth tell me of his own continued illness, and that my mother grows so much worse that he fears she cannot long continue, which troubles me very much. This day Mr. Caesar told me of a pretty experiment of his, of angling with a minikin, a gut-string varnished over, which keeps it from swelling and is beyond any hair for strength and smallness. The secret I like mightily. The 19th of March. Up and to the office where we sat all the morning, at noon, dined at home very pleasantly with my wife, and after dinner with a great deal of pleasure had her sing, which she begins to do with some pleasure to me more than I expected. Then to the office again, where all the afternoon close, and at night home to supper and to bed. It comes in my mind this night to set down how a house was the other day in Bishopsgate Street, blowed up with powder, a house that was untenanted, and between a flax shop and another, both bad for fire. But thanks be to God, it did no more hurt, and all do conclude it a plot. I would also remember, to my shame, how I was pleased yesterday to find the Vetus maid of Magister Griffin, sweeping of Nostra Office, ella con the Roman narith and bon body, which I did heretofore like, and doth still refresh me to think ella is come otra beth to us, and that I may ver her aloquando. This afternoon I am told again that the town doth talk of my Lord Arlington's being to be Lord Treasurer, and Sir William Coventry to be Secretary of State, and that for certain the match is concluded between the Duke of Richmond and Mistress Stuart, which I am well enough pleased with, and it is pretty to consider how his quality will allay people's talk, whereas had a meaner person married her, he would for certain have been reckoned a cuckold at first dash. The 20th of March. Up pretty betimes, and to the Old Swan, and there drank at Mitchell's. But his wife is not there, but gone to her mother's, who is ill, and so hath stayed there since Sunday. Thence to Westminster Hall, and drank at the Swan, and besado the petite morsa, and so to Mistress Martin's, who I find in opposante, and su hermana rising. So here I had opportunity, para tocar tu sobra su body as I would, and did traher sus pernos out of the lecto, and do hacer myself hacer. I sent for some burnt wine and drank, and then away, not pleased with my folly. And so to the hall again, and there stayed a little, and so home by water again, where, after speaking with my wife, I with Sir William Batten and John Minnis to our church, to the vestry, to be assessed by the late poll bill, where I am rated at an esquire, and for my office all will come to about £50, but not more than I expected, nor so much by a great deal as I ought to be for all my offices. So shall be glad to escape so. Thence by water again to Whitehall, and there up into the house. And do hear that news is come now that the enemy doth incline again to a peace, but could hear no particulars, so do not believe it. I had a great mind to have spoke with the king about a business proper enough for me, about the French prize man of war, how he would have her altered, only out of a desire to show myself mindful of business. But my linen was so dirty and my clothes mean, that I neither thought it fit for me to do that, nor go to other persons at the court with whom I had business, which did vex me, and I must remedy. Here I hear that the Duke of Richmond and Mistress Stuart were betrothed last night. Thence to Westminster Hall again, and there saw Betty Mitchell, and bought a pair of gloves of her, she being fain to keep shop there, her mother being sick, and father gathering of the tax. I am her de todo mi corazón. Thence my mind wandering all this day upon mauvais amour, which you'll be merry for. So home by water again, where I find my wife gone abroad. So I to Sir William Batten to dinner, and had a good dinner of ling and herring pie. Very good meat, best of that kind that ever I had. Thus having dined, I by coach to the Temple, and there did buy a little book or two. And it is strange how Ricot's Discourse of Turkey, which before the fire I was asked but 8 shillings for, there being all but 22 or thereabouts burnt, I did now offer 20 shillings, and he demands 50 shillings, and I think I shall give it him, though it be only as a monument of the fire. So to the New Exchange, where I find my wife, and so took her to Unthanks and left her there, and I to Whitehall and thence to Westminster, only out of idleness, and to get some little pleasure to my mauvaise flamme, but spared not, so back and took up my wife, and to Policonello at Charing Cross, which is prettier and prettier, and so full of variety that it is extraordinary good entertainment. Thence by coach home, that is, my wife home, and I to the Exchange, and there met with Fenn, who tells me they have yet no orders out of the Exchequer for money upon the Acts, which is a thing not to be borne by any prince of understanding or care, for no money can be got advanced upon the Acts, only from the weight of orders in form out of the Exchequer, so long time after the passing of the Acts. So home to the office a little, where I met with a sad letter from my brother, who tells me my mother is declared by the doctors to be past recovery, and that my father is also very ill every hour, so that I fear we shall see a sudden change there. God fit them and us for it. So to Sir William Penn's, where my wife was, and supped with a little, but yet little, mirth, and a bad nasty supper, which makes me not love that family. They do all things so meanly to make a little bad show upon their backs. Thence home and to bed, very much troubled about my father's and my mother's illness. The 21st of March. Up and to the office, where sat all the morning, at noon, home to dinner, and had some melancholy discourse with my wife, about my mother's being so ill, and my father. And after dinner, to cheer myself, and having the opportunity of Sir William Coventry and the Duke of York's being out of town, I alone out, and to the Duke of York's playhouse, where unexpectedly I came to see only the young men and women of the house act, they having liberty to act for their own profit on Wednesdays and Fridays this Lent. And the play they did yesterday, being Wednesday, was so well taken, that they thought fit to venture it publicly today. A play of my Lord Falkland's called The Wedding Night, a kind of a tragedy, and some things very good in it, but the whole together I thought not so. I confess I was well enough pleased with my seeing it, and the people did do better, without the great actors, than I did expect, but yet far short of what they do when they are there, which I was glad to find the difference of. Thence to Wright's home, and there to the office to my business hard, being sorry to have made this scape without my wife, but I have a good salvo to my oath in doing it. By and by in the evening comes Sir William Batten's Mingo to me to pray me to come to his master and Sir Richard Ford, who have very ill news to tell me. I knew what it was. It was about our trial for a good prize today, the Phoenix, worth 2,000 or 3,000 pounds. I went to them, where they told me with much trouble how they had sped, being cast and sentenced to make great reparation for what we had embezzled, and they did it so well that I was much troubled at it. When, by and by, Sir William Batten asked me whether I was mortified enough, and then told me we had got the day, which was mighty welcome news to me and us all. But it is pretty to see what money will do. Yesterday, Walker was mighty cold on our behalf till Sir William Batten promised him, if we sped in this business of the goods, a coach, and if at the next trial we sped for the ship, we would give him a pair of horses. And he hath strove for us today like a prince. Though the Swede's agent was there with all the vehemence he could to save the goods, but yet we carried it against him. This put me into mighty good heart. And then we go to Sir William Penn, who is come back tonight from Chatham, and did put him into the same condition, and then comforted him. So back to my office and wrote an affectionate and sad letter to my father about his and my mother's illness, and so home to supper and to bed late. The 22nd of March. Up and by coach to Sir Philip Warwick about business for Tangier, about money, and then to Sir Stephen Fox, to give him account of a little service I have done him about money coming to him from our office, and then to Lovett's, and saw a few baubling things of their doing, which are very pretty, but the quality of the people, living only by shifts, doth not please me, that it makes me I do no more care for them, nor shall have more acquaintance with them after I have got my Lady Castlemaine's picture home. So to Whitehall, where the King at chapel, and I would not stay, but to Westminster to Herbert's, and there, he being not well, I sent for a quart of claret, and burnt it, and drank, and had a bezado or three or four of Sarah, whom y'a trouvé à qui, and so by coach to Sir Robert Viner's about my accounts with him, and so to the Change, where I hear for certain that we are going on with our treaty of peace, and that we are to treat at Breda. But this our condescension people do think will undo us, and I do much fear it. So home to dinner, where my wife, having dressed herself in a silly dress of a blue petticoat uppermost, and a white satin waistcoat and white hood, though I think she did it because her gown is gone to the tailor's, did, together with my being hungry, which always makes me peevish, make me angry. But when my belly was full, was friends again, and dined, and then by water down to Greenwich, and thence walked to Woolwich, all the way, reading Playford's Introduction to Music, wherein are some things very pretty. At Woolwich I did much business, taking an account of the state of the ships there underhand, thence to Blackwall, and did the like for two ships we have repairing there, and then to Deptford, and did the like there, and so home. Captain Perryman with me from Deptford, telling me many particulars how the King's business is ill-ordered, and indeed so they are, God knows. So home and to the office where did business, and so home to my chamber, and then to supper and to bed. Landing at the Tower tonight, I met on Tower Hill with Captain Cock, and spent half an hour walking in the dusk of the evening with him, talking of the sorrowful condition we are in, that we must be ruined if the Parliament do not come and chastise us, that we are resolved to make a peace whatever it cost, that the King is disobliging the Parliament in this interval all that may be, yet his money is gone, and he must have more, and they likely not to give it without a great deal of do. God knows what the issue of it will be, but the considering that the Duke of York, instead of being at sea as Admiral, is now going from port to port as he is at this day at Harwich, and was the other day with the King at Sheerness, and hath ordered at Portsmouth how fortifications should be made to oppose the enemy in case of invasion. is to us a sad consideration and a shameful to the nation, especially after so many proud vaunts as we have made against the Dutch, and all from the folly of the Duke of Albemarle, who made nothing of beating them, and Sir John Lawson. He always declared that we never did fail to beat them with lesser numbers than theirs, which did so prevail with the king as to throw us into this war. The 23rd of March. At the office all the morning where Sir William Penn came, being returned from Chatham, from considering the means of fortifying the River Medway, by a chain at the stakes and ships laid there, with guns to keep the enemy from coming up to burn our ships, all our care now being to fortify ourselves against their invading us. At noon, home to dinner, and then to the office all the afternoon again, where Mr. Moore came, who tells me that there is now no doubt made of a peace being agreed on, the king having declared this week in council that they would treat at Breda. He gone, I to my office, where busy late, and so to supper and to bed. Vexed with our maid Luce, our cook-maid, who is a good drudging servant in everything else, and pleases us, but that she will be drunk, and hath been so, last night and all this day, that she could not make clean the house. My fear is only fire. The 24th of March, Lord's Day. With Sir William Batten to Whitehall, and there I to Sir George Carteret, who is mighty cheerful, which makes me think, and by some discourse, that there is expectations of a peace, but I did not ask him. Here was Sir John Minnis also, and they did talk of my Lord Brunker, whose father, it seems, did give Mr. Ashburnham and the present Lord Digby £1,200 to be made an Irish lord, and swore the same day that he had not twelvepence left to pay for his dinner. They made great mirth at this, my Lord Brunker having lately given great matter of offence both to them and us all, that we are at present mightily displeased with him. By and by to the Duke of York, where we all met, and there was the king also, and all our discourse was about fortifying of Medway and Harwich, which is to be entrenched quite round, and Portsmouth. And here they advised with Sir Godfrey Lloyd, and Sir Bernard de Gomme, the two great engineers, and had the plates drawn before them. And indeed all their care they now take is to fortify themselves, and are not ashamed of it, for when by and by my Lord Arlington came in with letters, and seeing the King and Duke of York give us and the officers of the Ordnance directions in this matter, he did move that we might do it as privately as we could, that it might not come into the Dutch Gazette presently, as the King's and Duke of York's going down the other day to Sheerness was the week after in the Harlem Gazette. The King and Duke of York both laughed at it, and made no matter, but said, "Let us be safe, and let them talk, for there is nothing will trouble them more, nor will prevent their coming more, than to hear that we are fortifying ourselves." And the Duke of York said further, says, "What said Marshal Turenne, when some in vanity said that the enemies were afeard, for they entrenched themselves?" "Well," says he, "I would they were not afeard, for then they would not entrench themselves, and so we could deal with them the better." Away thence and met with Sir Hugh Cholmondeley, who tells me that he doth believe the government of Tangier is bought by my Lord Allington, for a sum of money to my Lord Arlington, and something to Lord Bellasis, who, he did tell me particularly how, is as very a false villain as ever was born, having received money of him here upon promise and confidence of his return, forcing him to pay it by advance here, and promising to ask no more there, when at the same time he was treating with my Lord Allington to sell his command to him, and yet told Sir Hugh Cholmondeley nothing of it. But when Sir Hugh Cholmondeley told him what he had heard, he confessed that my Lord Allington had spoken to him of it, but that he was a vain man to look after it, for he was nothing fit for it. And then goes presently to my Lord Allington and drives on the bargain, yet tells Lord Allington what he himself had said of him, as Sir Hugh Cholmondeley had said them. I am glad I am informed hereof, and shall know him for a liar, etc. Sir Hugh Cholmondeley tells me further that he is confident there will be a peace, and that a great man did tell him that my Lord Albemarle did tell him the other day at Whitehall, as a secret, that we should have a peace, if anything that the King of France can ask, and our King can give, will gain it, which, he is, it seems, mad at. Thence back with Sir William Batten and William Penn, home by coach, and heard a piece of sermon, and so home to dinner, where Balty come very fine, and dined with us. And after dinner, with me by water to Whitehall, and there he and I did walk round the park, I giving him my thoughts about the difficulty of getting employment for him this year, but advised him how to employ himself, and I would do what I could. So he and I parted, and I to Martin's, where I find her within, and su hermano and la Verve Burrows. Here I did demorar toda the afternoon, besando las, and drank, and among other things did by a trick arrive at tocando el poil de la thing de the verve above said. By and by came up the mistress of the house, Crag, a pleasant, jolly woman. I stayed then but a little, and away home by water, through bridge, a brave evening, and so home to read, and anon to supper. Will Hewer with us, and then to read myself asleep again, and then to bed. And mightily troubled the most of the night with fears of fire, which I cannot get out of my head to this day since the last great fire. I did this night give the waterman, who uses to carry me, 10 shillings, at his request, for the painting of his new boat, on which shall be my arms. The 25th of March. Lady Day. Up and with Sir William Batten and William Penn by coach to Exeter House to our lawyers, to have consulted about our trial tomorrow, but missed them. So parted, and William Penn and I to Mr. Povey's about a little business of William Penn's, where we went over Mr. Povey's house, which lies in the same good condition as ever, which is most extraordinary fine, and he was now at work with a cabinet maker, making of a new inlaid table. Having seen his house, we away, having in our way thither, called at Mr. Lilly's, who was working, and indeed his pictures are, without doubt, much beyond Mr. Hales's, I think I may say I'm convinced. But a mighty proud man he is, and full of state. So home, and to the office, and by and by to dinner, a poor dinner, my wife and I, at Sir William Penn's. And then he and I before to Exeter House, where did not stay, but to the King's Playhouse, and by comes Mr. Lowther and his wife and mine, and into a box, forsooth, neither of them being dressed, which I was almost ashamed of. Sir William Penn and I in the pit. And here saw the Maiden Queen again, which, indeed, the more I see, the more I like, and is an excellent play, and so done by Nell her merry part, as cannot be better done in nature, I think. Thence home, and there I find letters from my brother, which tell me that yesterday, when he wrote, my mother did rattle in the throat, so as they did expect every moment her death, which, though I have a good while expected, did much surprise me, yet was obliged to sup at Sir William Penn's, and my wife, and there counterfeited some little mirth, but my heart was sad. And so home after supper and to bed, and much troubled in my sleep with dreams of my being crying by my mother's bedside, laying my head over hers and crying, she almost dead and dying. And so waked, but, which is strange, methought she had hair on her face, and not the same kind of face as my mother really has, but yet did not consider that, but did weep over her as my mother, whose soul God have mercy of. The 26th of March. Up with a sad heart in reference to my mother, of whose death I do undoubtedly expect to hear the next post, if not of my father's also, who, by his pain as well as his grief for her, is very ill. But on my own behalf I have cause to be joyful this day, as being my usual feast day for my being cut of the stone this day 9 years. And through God's blessing am at this day, and have long been in as good condition of health as ever I was in my life, or any man in England is, God make me thankful for it. But the condition I am in reference to my mother makes it unfit for me to keep my usual feast, unless it should please God to send her well, which I despair wholly of, and then I will make amends for it by observing another day in its room. So to the office, and at the office all the morning, where I had an opportunity to speak to Sir John Harmon about my desire to have my brother Balti go again with him to sea, as he did the last year, which he doth seem not only contented, but pleased with, which I was glad of. So, at noon, home to dinner, where I find Creed, who dined with us, but I had not any time to talk with him, my head being busy, and before I had dined was called away by Sir William Batten, and both of us in his coach, which I observe his coachman doth always go now from hence towards Whitehall, through Tower Street, and it is the best way, to Exeter House, where the judge was sitting. And after several little causes, comes on ours, and while the several depositions and papers were at large reading, which they called the preparatory, and being cold by being forced to sit with my hat off, close to a window in the hall, Sir William Penn and I to the castle tavern hard by, and got a lobster, and he and I stayed, and ate it, and drank good wine. I only burnt wine, as my whole custom of late hath been, as an evasion, God knows, for my drinking of wine. But it is an evasion which will not serve me now hot weather is coming, that I cannot pretend, as indeed I really have done, that I drink it for cold. But I will leave it off. And it is but seldom as when I'm in women's company that I must call for wine, for I must be forced to drink to them. Having done here, then we back again to the court, and there heard our cause pleaded, Sir William Turner, Sir William Walker, and Sir Ellis Layton being our counsel against only Sir Robert Wiseman on the other. The second of our three counsel was the best, and indeed did speak admirably, and is a very shrewd man. Nevertheless, as good as he did make our case, and the rest, yet when Wiseman came to argue nay, and though he did begin so sillily that we laughed in scorn in our sleeves at him, yet he did so state the case that the judge did not think fit to decide the cause to-night, but took to tomorrow, and did stagger us in our hopes, so as to make us despair of the success. I am mightily pleased with the judge, who seems a very rational, learned, and uncorrupt man, and much good reading and reason there is heard in hearing of this law argued, so that the thing pleased me, though our success doth shake me. Thence Sir William Penn and I home, and to write letters, among others, a sad one to my father upon fear of my mother's death. And so home to supper and to bed. The 27th of March. William Penn and I to Whitehall, and in the coach to begin our discourse again about Balti, and he promises me to move it this very day. He and I met my Lord Brunker at Sir George Carteret's by appointment, there to discourse a little business, all being likely to go to rack, for lack of money still. Thence to the Duke of York's lodgings, and did our usual business, and Sir William Penn telling me that he had this morning spoke of Balti to Sir William Coventry, and that the thing was done. I did take notice of it also to William Coventry, who told me that he had both the thing and the person in his head before to have done it, which is a double pleasure to me. Our business with the Duke of York being done, William Penn and I towards the Exchequer, and in our way met Sir George Downing going to chapel. But we stopped, and he would go with us back to the Exchequer, and showed us in his office his chests full, and ground and shelves full of money, and says that there is £50,000 at this day in his office, of people's money, who may demand it this day, and might have had it away several weeks ago upon the late act, but do rather choose to have it continue there, than to put it into the banker's hands, and I must confess it is more than I should have believed had I not seen it, and more than ever I could have expected would have arisen for this new act in so short a time. And if it do so now already, what would it do if the money was collected upon the act and returned into the Exchequer so timelily as it ought to be? But it comes into my mind here to observe what I have heard from Sir John Banks, though I cannot fully conceive the reason of it, that it will be impossible to make the Exchequer ever a true bank to all intents, unless the Exchequer stood nearer the Exchange, where merchants might with ease, while they are going about their business, at all hours and without trouble or loss of time, have their satisfaction, which they cannot have now without much trouble and loss of half a day, and no certainty of having the offices open. By this he means a bank for common practice and use of merchants, and therein I do agree with him. Being parted from Sir William Penn and George Downing, I to Westminster Hall and there met Balty, whom I had sent for, and there did break the business of my getting him the place of going again as muster-master with Harmon this voyage to the West Indies, which indeed I do owe to Sir William Penn. He is mighty glad of it and earnest to fit himself for it, but I do find, poor man, that he is troubled how to dispose of his wife, and apparently it is out of fear of her and his honour. I believe he hath received some cause of this, his jealousy and care, and I do pity him in it, and will endeavour to find out some way to do it for him. Having put him in a way of preparing himself for the voyage, I did go to the Swan, and there sent for Jervis, my old periwig maker, and he did bring me a periwig, but it was full of nits, so as I was troubled to see it, it being his old fault, and did send him to make it clean, and in the meantime, having stayed for him a good while, did go away by water and to the Castle Tavern by Exeter House, and there met William Batten, William Penn, and several others. Among the rest, Sir Ellis Layton, who doth apply himself to discourse with me, and I think by his discourse out of his opinion of my interest in Sir William Coventry. The man I find a wonderful, witty, ready man for sudden answers and little tales and sayings, very extraordinary witty, but in the bottom I doubt he is not so. Yet he pretends to have studied men, and the truth is, in several that I do know, he did give me a very inward account of them. But above all things he did give me a full account, upon my demand, of this judge of the Admiralty, Judge Jenkins, who, he says, is a man never practised in this court, but taken merely for his merit and abilities' sake from Trinity Hall, where he had always lived. Only by accident the business of the want of a judge being proposed to the Archbishop of Canterbury that now is, he did think of this man and sent for him up. And here he is, against the gré and content of the old doctors, made judge. But is a very excellent man both for judgment, temper, yet majesty enough, and by all men's report, not to be corrupted. After dinner to the court, where Sir Ellis Layton did make a very silly motion in our behalf that did neither hurt nor good. After him Walker and Wiseman, and then the judge did pronounce his sentence, for some a part of the goods and ship and the freight of the whole to be free, and returned and paid by us, and the remaining, which was the greater part, to be ours. The loss of so much troubles us, but we have got a pretty good part, thanks be to God, so we are not displeased, nor yet have cause to triumph, as we did once expect. Having seen the end of this, I being desirous to be at home to see the issue of my country letters about my mother, which I expect shall give me tidings of her death, I directly home, and there to the office, where find no letter from my father or brother, but by and by the boy tells me that his mistress sends me word that she hath opened my letter, and that she is loath to send me any more news. So I home, and there up to my wife in our chamber, and there received from my brother the news of my mother's dying on Monday, about 5 or 6 o'clock in the afternoon, and that the last time she spoke of her children was on Friday last, and her last words was, "God bless my poor Sam." The reading hereof did set me a-weeping heartily, and so weeping to myself a while, and my wife also to herself. I then spoke to my wife, recollecting myself, and indeed having some thoughts how much better, both for her and us, it is than it might have been had she outlived my father and me, or my happy present condition in the world. She being helpless, I was the sooner at ease in my mind, and then found it necessary to go abroad with my wife to look after the providing mourning to send into the country, some tomorrow, and more against Sunday, for my family, being resolved to put myself, and wife, and Barker and Jane, Will Hewers and Tom, in mourning, and my two undermaids to give them hoods and scarfs and gloves. So to my tailor's, and up and down, and then home, and to my office a little, and then to supper and to bed. My heart sad and afflicted, though my judgment at ease. The 28th of March. My tailor came to me betimes this morning, and having given him directions, I to the office and there all the morning. At noon dined well. Balti, who is mighty thoughtful how to dispose of his wife and would fain have us provide a place for her, which the thoughts of what I should do with her, if he should miscarry at sea, makes me avoid the offering him that she should be at my house. I find he is plainly jealous of her being in any place where she may have ill company, and I do pity him for it, and would be glad to help him, and will if I can. Having dined, I down by water with Sir William Batten, William Penn, and Sir Richard Ford to our prize, part of whose goods were condemned yesterday, the Lindenbaum, and there we did drink some of her wine, very good. But it did grate my heart to see the poor master come on board, and look about into every corner, and find fault that she was not so clean as she used to be, though methought she was very clean. And to see his new masters come in, that had nothing to do with her, did trouble me to see him. Thence to Blackwall, and there to Mr. Johnson's, to see how some works upon some of our repaired ships goes on. And at his house, ate and drank, and mighty extraordinary merry, too merry for me, whose mother died so lately. But they know it not, so cannot reproach me thereon, though I do reproach myself. And in going home had many good stories of Sir William Batten, and one of William Penn, the most tedious and silly and troublesome, he forcing us to hear him, that ever I heard in my life. So to the office a while, troubled with Sir William Penn's impertinences, he being half foxed at Johnson's, and so to bed. The 29th of March. Lay long talking with my wife about Balti, whom I do wish very well to, and would be glad to advance him, for he is very sober and willing to take all pains. Up unto Sir William Batten, who I find hath had some words with Sir William Penn, about the employing of a cooper about our prize wines, William Batten standing and indeed imposing upon us Mr. Morris, which I like not, nor doth William Penn, and I confess the very thoughts of what our goods will come to, when we have them, doth discourage me in going any further in the adventure. Then to the office till noon, doing business, and then to the Exchange, and thence to the Sun Tavern, and dined with William Batten, Richard Ford, and the Swede's agent, to discourse of a composition about our prizes that are condemned, but did do little, he standing upon high terms, and we doing the like. I home, and there find Balti and his wife, got thither both by my wife for me to give them good advice, for her to be with his father and mother all this time of absence for saving of money, and did plainly, and like a friend, tell them my mind of the necessity of saving money, and that if I did not find they did endeavour it, I should not think fit to trouble myself for them. But I see she is utterly against being with his father and mother, and he is fond of her, and I perceive the differences between the old people and them are too great to be presently forgot, and so he doth propose that it will be cheaper for him to put her to board at a place he has offered at Lee, and I, seeing that I am not like to be troubled with the finding a place for her, and having given him so much good advice, do leave them to stand and fall as they please, having discharged myself as a friend, and not likely to be accountable for her, nor be troubled with her, if he should miscarry, I mean, as to her lodging. And so broke up. Then he and I to make a visit to William Penn, who hath thought fit to show kindness to Balti in this business indeed, though he be a false rogue, but it was, he knew, a thing easy to do. Thence together to my shoemakers, cutlers, tailors, and up and down about my mourning, and in my going do observe the great streets in the city are marked out with piles drove into the ground, and if ever it be built in that form, with so fair streets, it will be a noble sight. So to the council chamber, but stayed not there, but to a periwig maker's of his acquaintance, and there bought two periwigs, mighty fine, indeed too fine, I thought, for me, but he persuaded me, and I did buy them £4 10s the two. Then to the Exchange, and bought gloves, and so to the Bullhead Tavern, whither he brought my French gun, and one Trulock, the famous gunsmith, that is, a mighty ingenious man, and he did take my gun in pieces, and made me understand the secrets thereof, and upon the whole doth find it a very good piece of work, and truly wrought, but for certain not a thing to be used much with safety, and he doth find that this very gun was never yet shot off. I was mightily satisfied with it and him, and the sight of so much curiosity of this kind. Here he brought also a haberdasher at my desire, and I bought a hat of him. And so away, and called my wife from his house, and so home, and to read. And then to supper and to bed, my head full in behalf of Balti, who tells me strange stories of his mother, among others how she, in his absence in Ireland, did pawn all his things that he had got in his service under Oliver, and run of her own accord, without her husband's leave, into Flanders, and that his purse, and 4 shillings a week which his father receives of the French church, is all the subsistence his father and mother have, and that about £20 a year maintains them, which, if it please God, I will find one way or other to provide for them, to remove that scandal away. The 30th of March. Up, and the French periwig maker, of whom I bought 2 yesterday, comes with them, and I am very well pleased with them. So to the office, where all the morning, at noon, home to dinner, and thence, with my wife's knowledge and leave, did by coach go see the silly play of my Lady Newcastle's called The Humorous Lovers, the most silly thing that ever came upon a stage. I was sick to see it, but yet would not but have seen it, that I might the better understand her. Here I spied Nip and Betty of the King's House, and sent Nip oranges, but having little money about me, did not offer to carry them abroad, which otherwise I had, I fear, been tempted to. So, with William Penn home, he being at the play also, a most summer evening, and to my office, where, among other things, a most extraordinary letter to the Duke of York touching the want of money, and the sad state of the King's service thereby, and so to supper and to bed. The 31st of March. Lord's Day. Up, and my tailor's boy brings my morning clothes home, and my wife's, hers and Barker's, but they go not to church this morning. I to church, and with my mourning, very handsome, and new periwig, make a great show. After church, home to dinner, and there came Betty Mitchell and her husband. I do and shall love her, but poor wretch, she is now almost ready to lie down. After dinner, Balti, who dined also with us, and I with Sir John Minnis in his coach to Whitehall, but did nothing, but by water to Strand Bridge, and thence walked to my Lord Treasurer's, where the King, Duke of York, and the Cabal, and much company without, and a fine day. Anon comes out from the Cabal my Lord Hollis and Mr. Henry Coventry, who it is conceived have received their instructions from the King this day, they being to begin their journey towards their treaty at Breda speedily, their passes being come. Here I saw the Lady Northumberland and her daughter-in-law, my Lord Treasurer's daughter, my Lady Percy, a beautiful lady indeed. So away back by water, and left Balti at Whitehall, and I to Mistress Martin, and there, athe todo which yo would athere con her, and so by coach home, and there to my chamber, and there to supper and bed, having not had time to make up my accounts of this month at this very day, but will in a day or two, and pay my forfeit for not doing it, though business hath most hindered me. The month shuts up only with great desires of peace in all of us, and a belief that we shall have a peace in most people, if a peace can be had on any terms. For there is a necessity of it, for we cannot go on with the war, and our masters are afeard to come to depend upon the good will of the Parliament any more, as I do here. April 1667. The 1st. Up, and with Sir John Minnis in his coach, set him down at the Treasurer's office in Broad Street, and I in his coach to Whitehall, and there had the good fortune to walk with Sir William Coventry into the garden, and there read our melancholy letter to the Duke of York, which he likes, and so to talk, and he flatly owns that we must have a peace, for we cannot set out a fleet, and, to use his own words, he fears we shall soon have enough of fighting in this new way that we have thought on for this year. He bemoans the want of money, and discovers himself jealous that Sir George Carteret doth not look after or concern himself for getting money as he used to do, and did say it is true if Sir George Carteret would only do his work, and my Lord Treasurer would do his own, Sir George Carteret hath nothing to do to look after money. But if he will undertake my Lord Treasurer's work to raise money of the bankers, then people must expect that he will do it, and did further say that he and my Lord Chancellor do at this very day labour all they can to vilify this new way of raising money, and making it payable, as it now is, into the Exchequer, and expressly said that in pursuance hereof my Lord Chancellor hath prevailed with the King in the close of his last speech to the House to say that he did hope to see them come to give money as it used to be given, without so many provisos, meaning, as Sir William Coventry says, this new method of the Act. While we were talking, there comes Sir Thomas Allen with two ladies, one of which was Mistress Rebecca Allen that I knew heretofore, the clerk of the rope-yard's daughter at Chatham, who, poor heart, came to desire favour for her husband who is clapped up, being a lieutenant, for sending a challenge to his captain in the most saucy base language that could be writ. I perceive Sir William Coventry is wholly resolved to bring him to punishment. "Forbear with this," says he, "and no discipline shall ever be expected." She, in this sad condition, took no notice of me, nor I of her. So away we to the Duke of York, and there in his closet William Coventry and I delivered the letter, which the Duke of York made not much of, I thought, as to laying it to heart as the matter deserved, but did promise to look after the getting of money for us, and I believe Sir William Coventry will add what force he can to it. I did speak to William Coventry about Balty's warrant, which is ready, and about being deputy treasurer, which he very readily and friendlily agreed to, at which I was glad, and so away, and by coach back to Broad Street, to Sir George Carteret's, and there find my brethren passing his accounts, which I helped till dinner, and dined there, and many good stories at dinner, among others, about discoveries of murder, and Sir John Minnis did tell one of the discovery of his own great-grandfather 15 years after he was murdered. Thence, after dinner, home, and by water to Redriff, and walked, fine weather, to Deptford, and there did business, and so back again. Walked, and pleased with a jolie femme that I saw going and coming in the way, which yo could haver sido contented, para haver stayed with, if yo could have ganar acquaintance con ella. But at such times as those, I'm at a great loss, having not confidence, ni alguno ready wit. So home, and to the office, where late, and then home to supper and bed. This evening Mistress Turner came to my office and did walk an hour with me in the garden, telling me stories how Sir Edward Sprag hath lately made love to our neighbour, a widow, Mistress Holworthy, who is a woman of state and wit and spirit, and doth contemn him the most and sent him away with the greatest scorn in the world. She tells me also odd stories how the parish talks of Sir William Penn's family, how poorly they clothe their daughter so soon after marriage, and do say that Mr. Lowther was married once before, and some such thing there hath been, whatever the bottom of it is. But to think of the clutter they make with his coach, and his own fine clothes, and yet how meanly they live within doors, and nastily, and borrowing everything of neighbours, is a most shitten thing. The 2nd of April. Up and to the office, where all the morning sitting, and much trouble, but little business done for want of money, which makes me mighty melancholy. At noon, home to dinner, and Mr. Dean with me, who hath promised me a very fine draught of the Rupert, which he will make purposely for me with great perfection, which he will make one of the beautifulest things that ever was seen of that kind in the world, she being a ship that will deserve it. Then to the office, where all the afternoon very busy, and in the evening weary home. And there to sing, but vexed with the unreadiness of the girl's voice to learn the latter part of my song, though I confess it is very hard half notes. So to supper, and to bed. The 3rd of April. up and with Sir William Batten to Whitehall to Sir William Coventry's chamber, and there did receive the Duke's order for Balti's receiving of the contingent money, to be paymaster of it. And it pleases me the more for that it is but £1,500, which will be but a little sum for to try his ability and honesty in the disposing of. And so I am the willinger to trust him and pass my word for him therein. By and by, up to the Duke of York, where our usual business, and among other things, I read two most dismal letters of the straits we're in, from Colonel Middleton and Commissioner Taylor, that ever were writ in the world, so as the Duke of York would have them to show the King. And to every demand of money, whereof we proposed many and very pressing ones, Sir George Carteret could make no answer but no money, which I confess made me almost ready to cry for sorrow and vexation. But that which was the most considerable was when Sir George Carteret did say that he had no fund to raise money on, and being asked by Sir William Coventry whether the 11 months' tax was not a fund, and he answered, no, that the bankers would not lend money upon it. Then Sir William Coventry burst out and said he did supplicate His Royal Highness, and would do the same to the King, that he would remember who they were that did persuade the King from parting with the chimney money to the Parliament. And taking that in the lieu which they would certainly have given, and which would have raised infallibly ready money, meaning the bankers and the farmers of the chimney money, where Sir George Carteret, I think, is one, saying plainly that whoever did advise the King to that, did as much as in them lay cut the King's throat, and did wholly betray him. To which the Duke of York did assent, and remembered that the King did say again and again at that time that he was assured, and did fully believe, the money would be raised presently upon a land tax. This put us all into astound, and Sir William Coventry went on to declare that he was glad he was come to have so little concern in the navy as he hath, for he cannot now give any good account of the navy business, and that all his work now was to be able to provide such orders as would justify His Royal Highness in business when it shall be called to account. And that he doth do, not concerning himself whether they are or can be performed or no, and that when it comes to be examined, and falls on my Lord Treasurer, he cannot help it, whatever the issue of it shall be. Hereupon Sir William Batten did pray him to keep also by him all our letters that come from the office that may justify us, which he says he doth do. And God knows it is an ill sign when we are once to come to study how to excuse ourselves. It is a sad consideration, and therewith we broke up, all in a sad posture, the most that ever I saw in my life. One thing more Sir William Coventry did say to the Duke of York, when I moved again that of about £9,000 debt to Lanyon at Plymouth, he might pay £3,700 worth of prize goods that he bought lately at the Candle, out of this debt due to him from the King. And the Duke of York and Sir George Carteret and Lord Berkeley saying, all of them, that my Lord Ashley would not be got to yield to it, who is treasurer of the prizes. Sir William Coventry did plainly desire that it might be declared whether the proceed of the prizes were to go to the helping on of the war, or no, and if it were, how then this could be denied, which put them all into another stound. And it is true, God forgive us. Thence to the chapel, and there by chance hear that Dr. Crewe is to preach, and so into the organ loft, where I met Mr. Carteret, and my Lady Jemima, and Sir Thomas Crewe's two daughters, and Dr. Child played. And Dr. Crewe did make a very pretty, neat, sober, honest sermon, and delivered it very readily, decently, and gravely, beyond his years, so as I was exceedingly taken with it, and I believe the whole chapel, he being but young. But his manner of his delivery I do like exceedingly. His text was, But first seek the kingdom of God, and all these things shall be added unto you. Thence with my lady to Sir George Carteret's lodgings, and so up into the house, and there do hear that the Dutch letters are come, and say that the Dutch have ordered a pass to be sent for our commissioners, and that it is now upon the way, coming with a trumpeter, blinded as is usual. But I perceive everybody begins to doubt the success of the treaty, all their hopes being only that if it can be had on any terms, the Chancellor will have it. For he dare not come before a Parliament, nor a great many more of the courtiers, and the King himself doth declare he doth not desire it, nor intend it, but on a strait, which God defend him from. Here I hear how the King is not so well pleased of this marriage between the Duke of Richmond and Mistress Stuart as is talked, and that he, by a while, did fetch her to the Bear at the Bridgefoot, where a coach was ready, and they are stole away into Kent without the King's leave, and that the King hath said he will never see her more, but people do think that it is only a trick. This day I saw Prince Rupert abroad in the Vane room, pretty well as he used to be, and looks as well, only something appears to be under his periwig on the crown of his head. So home by water, and there find my wife gone abroad to her tailor's, and I dined alone with Will Hewers, and then to the office to draw up a memorial for the Duke of York this afternoon at the council about Lanyon's business. By and by we met by appointment at the office upon a reference of Carcass's business to us again from the Duke of York, but a very confident, cunning rogue we shall find him at length. He carried himself very uncivilly to Sir William Batten this afternoon, as heretofore, and his silly lord pleaded for him, but all will not, nor shall not do, for out he shall go, though I love the man as a man of great parts and abilities. Thence to Whitehall by water, only asking Betty Mitchell by the way how she did, and there came too late to do anything at the council, so by coach to my periwig makers and tailors, and so home where I find my wife with her flageolet master, which I wish she would practice. And so to the office, and then to Sir William Batten's, and then to Sir William Penn's, talking and spending time in vain a little while, and then home up to my chamber, and so to supper and to bed, vexed at two or three things, viz., that my wife's watch proves so bad as it doth, the ill state of the office and kingdom's business, at the charge which my mother's death for mourning will bring me when all paid. The 4th of April. Up and going down found Jervis the barber with a periwig, which I had the other day cheapened at Westminster, but it being full of nits, as heretofore his work used to be, I did now refuse it, having bought elsewhere. So to the office till noon, busy, and then, which I think I've not done three times in my life, left the board upon occasion of a letter from Sir William Coventry, and meeting Balty at my house, I took him with me by water, and to the Duke of Albemarle to give him an account of that business, which was the shipping off of some soldiers for the manning of the few ships now going out with Harmon to the West Indies, which is a sad consideration, that at the very beginning of the year, and few ships abroad, we should be in such want of men. But they do hide themselves and swear they will not go to be killed, and have no pay. I find the Duke of Albemarle at dinner with sorry company, some of his officers of the army, dirty dishes, and a nasty wife at table, and bad meat, of which I made but an ill dinner. Pretty to hear how she talked against Captain Doutel, the Frenchman that the Prince and her husband put out the last year, and how, says she, the Duke of York hath made for his good services his cup-bearer, yet fired more shot into the Prince's ship and others of the King's ship than of the enemy. And the Duke of Albemarle did confirm it, and that somebody in the fight did cry out that a little Dutchman by his ship did plague him more than any other, upon which they were going to order him to be sunk, when they looked and found it was Doutel, who, as the Duke of Albemarle says, had killed several men in several of our ships. He said but for his interest, which he knew he had at court, he had hanged him at the yard's arm without staying for a court-martial. One Colonel Howard at the table magnified the Duke of Albemarle's fight, in June last, as being a greater action than ever was done by Caesar. The Duke of Albemarle did say it had been no great action had all his number fought as they should have done, to have beat the Dutch, but of his 55 ships not above 25 fought. He did give an account that it was a fight he was forced to, the Dutch being come in his way, and he being ordered to the buoy of the Nore, he could not pass by them without fighting, nor avoid them, without great disadvantage and dishonour. And this, Sir George Carteret, I afterward giving him an account of what he said, says that it is true, that he was ordered up to the Nore. But I remember, he said, had all his captains fought, he would no more have doubted to beat the Dutch with all their number than to eat the apple that lay on his trencher. My Lady Duchess, among other things, discoursed of the wisdom of dividing the fleet, which the general said nothing to, though he knows well that it come from themselves in the fleet, and was brought up hither by Sir Edward Spragg. Colonel Howard, asking how the prince did, the Duke of Albemarle answering, "Pretty well," the other replied, "but not so well as to go to sea again." "How?" says the Duchess. "What should he go for if he were well? For there are no ships for him to command. And so you have brought your hogs to a fair market," said she. It was pretty to hear the Duke of Albemarle himself to wish that they would come on our ground, meaning the French, for that he would pay them, so as to make them glad to go back to France again, which was like a general but not like an admiral. One at the table told an odd passage in this late plague, that at Petersfield, I think he said, one side of the street had every house almost infected through the town, and the other not one shut up. Dinner being done, I brought Balti to the Duke of Albemarle to kiss his hands, and thank him for his kindness the last year to him, and take leave of him, and then Balti and I to walk in the park, and out of pity to his father, told him what I had in my thoughts to do for him about the money. That is, to make him deputy treasurer of the fleet, which I have done by getting Sir George Carteret's consent, and an order from the Duke of York for £1,500 to be paid to him. He promises the whole profit to be paid to my wife, for to be disposed on as she sees fit for her father and mother's relief. So, mightily pleased with our walk, it being mighty pleasant weather, I back to Sir George Carteret's, and there he had newly dined, and talked and find that he doth give everything over for lost, declaring no money to be raised, and let Sir William Coventry name the man that persuaded the king to take the land tax on promise of raising present money upon it. He will, he says, be able to clear himself enough of it. I made him merry with telling him how many land admirals we are to have this year, Allen at Plymouth, Holmes at Portsmouth, Spragg for Medway, Teddyman at Dover, Smith to the north, and Harmon to the south. He did defend to me Sir William Coventry as not guilty of the dividing of the fleet last year, and blesses God, as I do, for my Lord Sandwich's absence, and tells me how the king did lately observe to him how they have been particularly punished that were enemies to my Lord Sandwich. Mightily pleased I am with his family. And my Lady Carteret was on the bed today, having been let blood, and tells me of my Lady Jem's being big-bellied. Thence with him to Lord Treasurer's, and there walked during council sitting with Sir Stephen Fox, talking of the sad condition of the king's purse and affairs thereby, and how sad the king's life must be to pass by his officers every hour that are 4 years behindhand unpaid. And my Lord Berkeley I met with there and fell into talk with him on the same thing, wishing to God that it might be remedied, to which he answered with an oath that it was as easy to remedy it as anything in the world, saying that there is himself and three more would venture their carcasses upon it to pay all the king's debts in 3 years, had they the managing his revenue and putting £300,000 in his purse as a stock. But, Lord, what a thing is this to me, that do know how likely a man my Lord Berkeley of all the world is to do such a thing as this. Here I spoke with Sir William Coventry, who tells me plainly that to all future complaints of lack of money he will answer but with a shrug of his shoulder, which methought did come to my heart to see him to begin to abandon the king's affairs and let them sink or swim, so he do his own part, which, I confess, I believe he doth beyond any officer the king hath. But unless he do endeavour to make others do theirs, nothing will be done. The consideration hereof did make me go away very sad, and so home by coach, and there took up my wife and Mercer, who had been today at Whitehall to the Maundy, it being Maundy Thursday, But the king did not wash the poor people's feet himself, but the Bishop of London did it for him, but I did not see it. And with them took up Mistress Anne Jones at her mother's door, and so to take the air to Hackney, where good neat's tongue and things to eat and drink, and very merry, the weather being mighty pleasant. And here I was told that at their church they have a fair pair of organs, which plays while the people sing, which I am mighty glad of, wishing the like at our church at London, and would give £50 towards it. So, very pleasant, and hugging of Mercer in our going home, we home, and there I to the office to do a little business, and so to supper at home and to bed. The 5th of April. Up and troubled with Mr. Carcass's coming to speak with me, which made me give him occasion to fall into a heat, and he begun to be ill-mannered to me, which made me angry. He gone, I to Sir William Penn about the business of Mistress Turner's son to keep his ship in employment. But so false a fellow as Sir William Penn is, I never did nor hope shall ever know again. So to the office, and there did business till dinner-time, and then home to dinner, wife and I alone. And then down to the Old Swan, and drank with Betty and her husband. But no opportunity para besarla. So to Whitehall, to the council chamber, where I find no council held till after the holidays. So to Westminster Hall, and there bought a pair of snuffers, and saw Mistress Howlett, after her sickness, come to the hall again. And so by coach to the New Exchange, and Mercer's and other places, to take up bills for what I owe them, and to Mistress Pierce to invite her to dinner with us on Monday, but stayed not with her. In the street, met with Mr. Zanchy, my old acquaintance, at Cambridge, reckoned a great minister here in the city, and by Sir Richard Ford particularly, which I wonder at, for methinks in his talk he is but a mean man. I set him down in Holborn, and I to the Old Exchange, and there to Sir Robert Viner's, and made up my accounts there to my great content. But I find they do not keep so regularly as to be able to do it easily and truly and readily, nor would it have been easily stated by anybody on my behalf but myself, several things being to be recalled to memory, which nobody else could have done. And therefore it is fully necessary for me to even accounts as often with these people as I can. So to the change, and there met with Mr. James Hooblin, but no hopes, as he sees, of peace, whatever we pretend, but we shall be abused by the King of France. Then home to the office, and busy late, and then to Sir William Batten, where Mr. Young was talking about the building of the city again, and he told me that those few churches that are to be new built are plainly not chosen with regard to the convenience of the city. They stand a great many in a cluster about Cornhill, but that all of them are either in the gift of the Lord Archbishop, or Bishop of London, or Lord Chancellor, or gift of the city. Thus all things, even to the building of churches, are done in this world. And then he says, which I wonder at that I should not in all this time see, that Moorfields have houses 2 stories high in them, and paved streets, the city having let leases for 7 years, which he doth conclude will be very much to the hindering the building of the city. But it was considered that the streets cannot be passable in London till a whole street be built, and several that had got ground of the city for charity, to build sheds on, had got the trick presently to sell that for £60, which did not cost them £20 to put up. And so the city, being very poor in stock, thought it as good to do it themselves, and therefore lets leases for 7 years on that ground in Moorfields. And a good deal of this money thus advanced hath been employed for the enabling them to find some money for Commissioner Taylor and Sir William Batten, towards the charge of the loyal London, or else it is feared it had never been paid. And Taylor, having a bill to pay, wherein Alderman Hooker was concerned, it was his invention to find out this way of raising money, or else this had not been thought on neither. So home to supper and to bed. This morning came to me the collectors for my poll money, for which I paid for my title as a squire and place of clerk of acts, and my head and wife's and servants and their wages, £40, 17 shillings and no pence. And though this be a great deal, yet it is a shame I should pay no more, that is, that I should not be assessed for my pay, as in the victualling business in Tangier, and for my money, which of my own accord I determined to charge myself with £1,000 money, till, coming to the vestry, and seeing nobody of our ablest merchants, as Sir Andrew Rickard, to do it, I thought it not decent for me to do it, nor would it be thought wisdom to do it unnecessarily, but vainglory. The 6th of April. Up and betimes in the morning down to the Tower Wharf, there to attend the shipping of soldiers to go down to man some ships going out, and pretty to see how merrily some and most go, and how sad others, the leave they take of their friends, and the tears that some wives and others wenches shed to part with them. A pretty mixture. So to the office, having stayed as long as I could, and there sat all the morning, and then home at noon to dinner, and then abroad, Balty with me, and to Whitehall by water to Sir George Carteret, about Balty's £1,500 contingent money for the fleet to the West Indies. And so away with him to the exchange, and mercers and drapers, up and down, to pay all my scores occasioned by this morning for my mother, and emptied a £50 bag. And it was a joy to me to see that I am able to part with such a sum without much inconvenience, at least without any trouble of mind. So to Captain Cox to meet Fenn to talk about this money for Balty, and there Cox tells me that he is confident there will be a peace, whatever terms be asked us, and he confides that it will take, because the French and Dutch will be jealous one of another, which shall give the best terms, lest the other should make the peace with us alone, to the ruin of the third, which is our best defence, this jealousy, for aught I at present see. So home, and there very late, very busy, and then home to supper and to bed. The people having got their house very clean against Monday dinner. The 7th of April, Easter Day. Up and when dressed, with my wife in mourning for my mother, to church both, where Mr. Mills, a lazy sermon. Home to dinner, wife and I and Will Hewer, and after dinner I by water to Whitehall to Sir George Carteret's, there to talk about Balty's money, and did present Balty to him to kiss his hand. And then to walk in the park and heard the Italian music at the Queen's Chapel, whose composition is fine, but yet the voices of the eunuchs I do not like our women, nor am more pleased with it at all than with English voices, but that they do jump most excellently with themselves and their instrument, which is wonderful pleasant. But I am convinced more and more that as every nation hath a particular accent and tone in discourse, so as the tone of one not to agree with or please the other, no more can the fashion of singing to words. For that the better the words are set, the more they take in of the ordinary tone of the country whose language the song speaks, so that a song well composed by an Englishman must be better to an Englishman than it can be to a stranger, or than if set by a stranger in foreign words. Thence back to Whitehall, and there saw the King come out of chapel after prayers in the afternoon, which he is never at but after having received the sacrament. And the court, I perceive, is quite out of mourning, and some very fine, among others, my Lord Gerard in a very rich vest and coat. Here I met with my Lord Bellasis, and it is pretty to see what a formal story he tells me of his leaving his place upon the death of my Lord Cleveland, by which he is become captain of the pensioners, and that the King did leave it to him to keep the other, or take this, whereas I know the contrary, that they had a mind to have him away from Tangier. He tells me he is commanded by the King to go down to the north to satisfy the deputy lieutenants of Yorkshire, who have desired to lay down their commissions, upon pretence of having no profit by their places, but charge, but indeed is upon the Duke of Buckingham's being under a cloud, of whom there is yet nothing heard, so that the King is apprehensive of their discontent and sends him to pacify them. And I think he is as good a dissembler as any man else, and a fine person he is for person, and proper to lead the pensioners, but a man of no honour nor faith, I doubt. So to Sir George Carteret's again to talk with him about Balty's money, and wrote a letter to Portsmouth about part of it. And then in his coach with his little daughter Poopot, as he used to nickname her, and saw her at home, and her maid, and another little gentlewoman, And so I walked into Moorfields and, as is said, did find houses built two stories high and like to stand, and must become a place of great trade till the city be built, and the street is already paved as London streets used to be, which is a strange and to me an unpleasing sight. So home, and to my chamber about sending an express to Portsmouth about Balti's money. And then comes Mistress Turner to inquire after her son's business, which goes but bad, which led me to show her how false Sir William Penn is to her, whereupon she told me his obligations to her and promises for her, and how a while since he did show himself dissatisfied in her son's coming to the table and applying himself to me, which is a good note, and a note I will make use of. She gone, I to other business in my chamber, and then to supper and to bed. The Swedes' ambassadors and our commissioners are making all the haste they can over to the treaty for peace, and I find at court, and particularly Lord Bellis's, says there will be a peace, and it is worth remembering what Sir William Coventry did tell me, as a secret, though, that whereas we are afeard Harmon's fleet to the West Indies will not be got out before the Dutch come and block us up, we shall have a happy pretext to get out our ships, under pretence of attending the ambassadors and commissioners, which is a very good but yet a poor shift. The 8th of April. Up and having dressed myself and to the office a little and out, and expecting to have seen the pretty daughter of the Ship Tavern at the hither end of Billiter Lane, whom I never yet have opportunity to speak to, I in there to drink my morning draught of a half pint of Rhenish wine, but Ami Dolor, Ella, and their family are going away thence, and a new man come to the house. So I away to the temple to my new booksellers, and there I did agree for Rycott's late history of the Turkish policy, which cost me 55 shillings, whereas it was sold plain before the late fire for 8 shillings, and bound and coloured as this is, for 20, for I bought it finely bound and truly coloured, all the figures, of which there was but 6 books done so, whereof the King and Duke of York and Duke of Monmouth and Lord Arlington had 4, the 5th was sold, and I have bought the 6th. So to inquire out Mistress Nip's new lodging, but could not, but do hear of her at the playhouse where she was practising, and I sent for her out by a porter, and the jade came to me all undressed, so cannot go home to my house to dinner as I had invited her, which I was not much troubled at, because I think there is a distance between her and Mistress Pierce, and so our company would not be so pleasant. So, I home, and there find all things in good readiness for a good dinner, and unexpectedly I find little Miss Tooker, whom my wife loves not, from the report of her being already naught. However, I do show her countenance, and by come my guests, Dr. Clark and his wife, and Mistress Worship and her daughter, and then Mr. Pierce and his wife and boy, and Betty, and then I sent for Mercer, so that we had, with my wife and I, 12 at table, and very good and pleasant company, and a most neat and excellent, but dear dinner. But, Lord, to see with what envy they looked upon all my fine plate was pleasant, for I made the best show I could, to let them understand me and my condition, to take down the pride of Mistress Clark, who thinks herself very great. We sat long, and very merry, and all things agreeable, and after dinner went out by coaches, thinking to have seen a play, but came too late to both houses, and then they had thoughts of going abroad somewhere. But I thought all the charge ought to be mine, and therefore I endeavoured to part the company, and so ordered it to set them all down at Mr. Pierce's. And there my wife and I and Mercer left them in good humour, and we three to the King's house, and saw the latter end of The Surprisal, wherein was no great matter, I thought, by what I saw. Thence away to Policanello, and there had 3 times more sport than at the play, and so home, and there, the first night we have been this year in the garden late. We three and our Barker singing very well, and then home to supper, and so broke up and to bed, mightily pleased with this day's pleasure.